CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How are we doing? We've got a full panel this morning. We've got Mash, we've got Leanne, we've got me, and we got you. That's all we need. Don't you just love waking up and it's rained or it's raining? I spoke about this the other day. It's still my favorite thing. It's the best way to wake up. So what's happening?
I do love it on a weekend.
Oh, the best. So what's happening, you two? What's been going on?
A lot has been going on, Gareth.
Uh-oh. Have we got a...
Oh, no.
Have we got a dramatic Mash story for a Monday? Who would have guessed, huh?
Well, today, all I need is advice more than anything. Uh-oh. From you guys and from the audience. Okay. Because, load shedding is back and it's in full force. And in my area, I've been having quite a bit of electricity problems over the last week. But so I was getting like 6 hours of load shedding. Not even load shedding, just power
cuts. What? No. I thought we were actually better now than we were like 2 weeks ago. No?
Everyone else is better. It's just my area, just unfortunately. Yeah. Hmm. So my area is really suffering at the moment. And just power cuts all the time, unexpectedly. I mean, yesterday I was trying to bake, and then they came out again. So I wanted to scream because I had just put the cookies in the damn oven. So that's the life I've been living. So yesterday I didn't have electricity until quite late. Okay. And then one of my neighbors actually came by to... Gareth is already laughing.
Is this the nightgown neighbor or is it a different one?
No, this is a completely different neighbor. Okay. My neighbor came by to actually ask for, to borrow a candle. So I just wanted to start the day and get your advice.
Okay.
Do you guys think a person would actually ask for a candle? I mean, we live in a generation of cell phones. You have cell phones. You can use your flashlight. People have Magentos, those little lamp thingies that you get at Macro. We have so many different alternatives to a candle. So having someone actually come over to my house and ask to borrow a candle for me is very unusual.
I don't think
so. I need to get you guys' feedback.
I don't think they wanted a candle.
they wanted light in their life, but yeah, maybe in a different way.
Right. I think they were actually after you. They were like, they couldn't handle, they weren't sure how to deal with it, but they wanted you. So like, let me think of what I can ask him for. I know I'll ask him for a candle, but they really wanted, there was an excuse to see you. Don't you agree?
Yeah, a cup of sugar wouldn't have gone down because no one could bake.
No.
And what would you need a whole cup of sugar for?
And also, I mean, one candle. So I figured it out quite quickly and I actually regretted going like, I don't have, bye. Afterwards, I had afterthoughts and I thought to myself, I should have just let them in. I should have just been like, yeah, come in, come have a cup of water because you can't make tea. There's no electricity. Come have a cup of water. Come have a cool drink, a glass of wine or something. So I've been thinking about that. It's been running over and over in my head the whole evening. And I thought to myself, damn it. This could have been my future, you know? I just blew it away, but it's fine.
You did.
But also, what sort of world do you live in and complex do you live in, Mash, where all these romantic liaisons have opportunity both ways? What's going on?
It's like a soap opera sort of complex. It seems to me to be a place where people – there's always something going on that isn't what looks like is going on. You know, there's some underlying story. There's some golden thread like tying everything
together.
And
no one really knows.
Yeah, there's
like on either side.
There's a director who's in the background going, okay, now we're going to send this character in. It's almost like what was the Truman Show? And Mash is Mash is Truman. Because we get to hear his stories every Monday. Now they have to keep upping the ante. They have to keep making it exciting. So they send the new neighbor around and, you know, hi, Mash, could I have a candle? Da-da, pow, pow, or whatever.
Oh, you won't get a candle.
Well, you didn't take the bait, though.
But, yeah, so I didn't take the bait, unfortunately. No. But that's what's been happening in my life this weekend. Nothing exciting yet. So let's wait and see. What's been happening with you, Leanne?
Yeah, what's been happening with you?
Certainly not anyone knocking on my door.
What do you mean? Are they not hanging around for like neighbor sex, like at Mash's complex? Hey, Leanne. Hello.
No, I mean, the most exciting Morning. Thing that happened in
I
my driveway
you
was.
Coffee.
No, the most exciting thing that happened in my driveway over the weekend was I scared the Mr. Delivery guy, but quite badly.
What happened?
I think he thought he was being hijacked. Oh, so just before he arrived, I'm obviously tracking him, his path, his journey on my phone. And just before he arrived, I thought, I must move my car because it was in the sun. So I thought, let me move it into the shade. And then I thought, I might as well just sit in the car while I'm waiting for him to arrive. He's just around the corner. And so he came in and didn't expect that I would come out from behind him. And I think he almost pooped his little scooter pants when I came from behind.
Yeah.
So that was quite fun. He almost dropped the tray of what are they called, smoothies. But nothing like that happening. I did get to see some family, which was great.
Okay.
And I promised myself that I would work, and that promise, sat with me from Friday all the way to last night, and nothing came of fruition from that.
Well,
hey, boo.
The weekends are pretty much full. I've got something happening every weekend now until the end of the year, and it's not that many, so I don't want to piss you off. Especially if you're enjoying yourself right now and you're thinking, oh, this is the best time of the year and I'm excited about it like I am, right? But essentially, okay, so we've already had the first weekend of November. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we are well into December, right? In fact, we've got 3 weekends left of this month, and then it's 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then it's Christmas. So hate to spoil it for you, but that's how it's going to go. It's going to be over before it's even begun. So just enjoy every single second of it. And if you've got things happening already, if your diary is full of stuff, I mean, that's good, right? That means you've got things to look forward to. You're going to be keeping really busy. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I got invited out this weekend, but I didn't go. On Friday night, rather.
Yeah.
And the reason why I didn't go is because my friend who invited me out, they were already out and about at the club, and they invited me out at 11:30. Now, I didn't quite appreciate this, and I actually ended up arguing with this friend of mine because I thought to myself, I'm an afterthought.
Yeah.
You guys made plans. Right. You made this big hoorah. Mm-hmm. And then at 11:30, you're like, oh, let's invite Mash. So I kind of felt like I'm your afterthought. It's either I'm in your damn plans or I'm not.
Right.
Why are you inviting me out at 11:30?
How rude.
So I didn't go out.
Yeah, also because they'll probably be well-oiled and on their way, and all the formalities are out of the way, and they're all on board with each other's stories, and then you pitch up, and it's like, hey, what's happening?
But, exactly.
My crickets.
Mm. Well, you can also tell, like when people have dinners or house parties or whatever, and they invite you like on the day, but in the afternoon, and you're like, I think this is because they needed to fill a gap. I'm the person they've called because they, someone else let them down. It's never a good feeling. Mm. Never
good. Never a good feeling. And also, and also joining other people's plans is never really fun.
No.
It's never really fun. If anything were to happen, it'll happen to you. That's what usually happens. The person who has never in the plan, if anything were to happen, phone gets stolen, whatever, wild night out, it'll always happen to the person who was never part of the plan. So, no thank you.
there's quite a lot of stuff that we need to talk about. It's also election week in the US this week. So we've got, they will finally be getting on with the business of an election. Which, I don't think election season ever ends now. It's just all year round, 24/7. So there's going to be a lot of noise coming out of America this week. And there are probably a few people who are celebrating, you know, end of year functions, that kind of thing is happening again. So if you've got any of that going on, mm-hmm. let us know. Also, you could drop us a WhatsApp on 071-783-6214. That's 071-783-6214. There is no need to be this person.
Yeah, there definitely is.
Hang on a second.
Yeah, no, just let us enjoy.
is that about
there, there definitely seems to be more activity in the neighborhoods and more like neighbors having parties. And yeah, there was quite a wild party in the area this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, yeah, people are really back into the swing of things. Out and about and no longer being
okay.
You mentioned hermits in their homes.
You mentioned the swing of things. So I've got to ask you something because you used to date a swinger and you were a swinger for a while. So I heard there are two things that people, this came up in a conversation I had on Friday. Apparently there are two ways you can tell if someone is a swinger, or there are three. You can ask them straight up, like, hey, are you a swinger? And then they'll go, yes, how did you know? Or they'll go, excuse me, it's none of your business or whatever. So that's obviously, that makes sense. But then there are two ways you can tell. Is it true, Leanne? And you've been out of that whole world for a long time, so maybe you're not the right person to ask, but maybe you still know some people who are. Is it true that swingers in these bigger states, that they leave their garage door open if they are into swinging? Because
like just a little bit.
I don't know.
Overnight?
I have no idea.
Like an actual garage door.
Yes.
Garage like maybe door. If there's a swingers party going on, maybe they might.
There's
something like that.
There's that. And then the other way that they said is that apparently real professional swingers who are doing this all the time, they have those Carol Boys door handles.
Mm.
And apparently that is also a dead giveaway that the people who live in that house now. I mean, we might have listeners who right now have got Carol Boys handles on their doors, and they didn't realize
this
is, yeah, they didn't realize this is a swingers thing. But those are the two things I heard for sure. And the reason I'm asking is because for the whole of last week, I've had some builders here. They've been building like these, fixing these steps that I've got in front of my house. And it's taken, you know, like 5 days, but because the builder needs to put things like the cement in the garage, otherwise it's going to get wet. I've had the garage door open pretty much all day for 5 days. I haven't had any interest, which is a little bit disappointing. But I suddenly thought, oh, wow, okay, I hope people don't think I'm a swinger. So is this true? What do you know about this? Help us.
So firstly, I've never heard the cowboy's door handle thing before. Okay. What I do know is, and I was about to say, is it perhaps in the shape of a pineapple? Because, of course, pineapples are the symbol for swingers.
Really?
So you'll yes. So you'll often find a pineapple sticker on a door or on a window, just like you would a gay flag or a trans flag. It's, you know, something showing your sexual interest. The pineapple is the symbol. So often on cruise ships in particular, you'll find quite blatantly pineapples stuck to people's cabin doors, indicating that they're open and interested. Garage door thing I've also never heard of, but I think that that might be because of security issues in South Africa. We just don't leave our garage door open. And also because of that, the parties are very private and well organized. So you need to be part of the community to be invited. If you're bringing somebody new, they would need to submit an HIV test.
Wow. Okay. It's a lot more complicated.
Also as,
right. So
yeah.
Basically,
also as a single man, you wouldn't be allowed to go to this party anyway.
Okay. I got you. See that.
Is this the door handle?
I can't see it on
the screen. We just got a blank screen.
Let's just see. We couldn't see. Just let's see.
Oh, sorry.
What the hell? Are those?
Those look like.
Are those penises?
Oh, they are door handles.
Oh no! It's
it looks like someone in a yoga position.
I think that's the point.
Oh wow! Okay,
I think they're supposed to look like penises.
Maybe those are them. That might be it. Who knows? I don't know.
Poor old Carol Boyce.
So, yeah, I mean, she's
in her grave.
She's just trying to sell door handles, and this is what's going on. All right. Clearly, you know, it's bullshit. You hear a lot of urban legends about mm-hmm. this stuff. And they said that the biggest estates for this to happen in are Midstream and Silver Lakes in Pretoria. So yep, I don't
definitely
know.
Definitely Pretoria.
Really?
Silver Lakes, yes. Mm.
And often, you know, swingers will first go out somewhere to a bar or a club. And because it's so community driven, you know, you said maybe one of the things is, could you just ask the person? Generally, if you're with these people, you'll be known. Everyone in the bar will know that the swingers are there that night.
Oh,
it's
wow.
just, yeah. And then they might strike up a conversation with you like I've had before.
All right. So
can't you also tell from all the fortuners outside? When there's like a whole bunch of fortuners parked outside.
Is that the kind?
Why?
Is that the swinger car? Is that it?
I'm assuming it is.
Oh my God.
I've heard stories about that like everybody puts their fortune keys in a bowl, and then whosoever key you grab out of the bowl is who you're sleeping with that evening.
Yes.
For that round. Yeah. So it's a fortune.
Fortune
is a swingers car.
I think we're defaming a bunch of really you know, like nice people who happen to be driving fortuners.
Yeah.
With Carol Boy's handles.
Yeah. Well.
Not on the fortunate. Otherwise, you're just screaming out desperately.
So basically, if you came onto the show this morning and you thought you'd just hear some, you know, some like friendly nonsense mash in the end and I just laughing, talking shit. Well, no, we've just basically defamed a whole swathe of people in this country who just thought that they'd buy a nice pair of door handles and, you know, drive a fortuner. And we've just made them seem like they're really twisted. But who knew?
Absolutely.
So, all right, here's something from Tracy. She says, according to Sex in Afrikaans, which was that that show that was on not so long ago, in Pretoria, swingers parties are called a braai and a naai, or a bring and naai. Oh, my God. Mm. Woody says, I'll never eat Hawaiian pizza again, which is hilarious. I'm screwed as I don't have a front door, says Freddie. Oh, well, counts you out. Sorry about that, Freddie.
Yeah.
Too bad. Rebellious Ruth says, I love that I just walked in on this. That's what happens on this show. There was a certain upmarket bar in Benoni that was apparently owned by swingers. Wow. And then Vyasin wants to know, is there a chance of one losing their partner while being in the swinger community? You see, you have to go in. You can't. You just said it, Leanne. Like, I couldn't join because I'm a single guy. You have to bring a partner.
Mm.
Right.
I doubt you'd lose your partner because you're both in the same mindset when you go there, aren't you?
Yeah, you definitely have to be in the same mindset. You know, usually you've met your partner in that setting anyway.
Yes.
So you need to be mature about it and understand that the same can happen. You could meet somebody else.
Just Brian Nye, man.
I don't see how it works long term, but we won't get into that discussion. There's so much other stuff to talk about. All right, so let's move on. We do have a few things on the agenda. Apparently, Elon Musk has been having a very busy time on Twitter. He just banned Kathy Griffin because she was impersonating him. So obviously everybody went, oh, well, that's not a free speech. You know, all the people who hate Elon Musk are like, oh, well, how can you be pro-free speech if you ban someone? So apparently Kathy Griffin turned her her name into Elon Musk and the account was suspended. So eventually someone said to him, someone said, what are you doing? And Elon said, no, actually, she was suspended for impersonating a comedian. But if she wants her account back, she can have it for $8, which is excellent. So she's going to have to pay, which is great because Kathy Griffin, I think she probably she should be able to afford it, although she hasn't done any successful gigs or been paid any money for at least 5 years in comedy. She's not that funny anymore. You remember she's become intensely political. But who knows? I mean, this is the kind of shit that he can do this. It's his company, right?
Yes.
Well, exactly. And she's not the only one. There were quite a few celebrities who, in kind of protest, changed their name to Elon Musk.
Oh, really?
So if he's going to ban people, he's going to need more staff to monitor, and he doesn't have more staff because he's laid off half of them. It's a big trend at the moment for Twitter employees to wake up in the morning and film themselves opening their laptops to see whether they still have their jobs or not.
Okay,
poor Kathy Griffin. This woman was cancelled for quite a long time. In fact, she wasn't cancelled. She described it as she was erased. And for some time, you never saw her anyway. Nobody wanted to book her. There was no shows. She was just off the face of the earth. And I can't remember why, but I think it was something tweeted.
It's because she's
a couple of years back.
She's terrible. She didn't she tweet a picture of like she had this thing where she had cut off Donald Trump's head? Or something. I think it was that.
I think that was it.
And you're like, yes. Well, okay, sure. That's funny, but it's just a bit crappy. And she is a bit crappy. She's like, she's one of those people who, I don't know. I mean, I've seen her on a roast where she was quite funny. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Joan Rivers. And she was okay on that. Yes. But other than that, I don't think she's been funny for a long time. So let's see again, if you remember what people used to say when someone on the right was banned from Twitter, what did people on the left say? They came up and they said, oh, well, why don't you just start your own? So they did, and they called it Parler or something like that, and then that was shut down because no one would host their servers. So all I'm going to say to all these people who are unhappy about whatever Elon does with a company that he has bought, that he owns, is start your own. Just start your own. That's what you said to people on the right. You were like, well, why don't you just start your own instead of complaining? So that's what I'm going to say to them. So go, Kathy Griffin. Let's see if you can start your own and if anyone will follow you. I mean, look at her. Doesn't she look like, and I don't want to be extra mean here, but she does look like a guy in drag impersonating a woman. Don't you think?
Her looks have always been a bit of a discussion in the media, and there's some pretty nasty photos of her without her makeup, but you know what's new, the media is always doing that.
Yeah, and frankly, you know, who do you know that looks exactly the same without makeup and with makeup? I mean, to be honest, this is something that guys just have to gamble. You throw the dice and you never know. You meet someone and you know this girl's got makeup on and she looks magnificent. And then who knows? You end up going home together. You wake up the next morning and she doesn't look anything like she looked the night before. I think it's misrepresentation, frankly.
Well, I think it's good makeup artistry skills for her.
That's pretty true. Tabo says Parler is still there. Yes, of course. But it is nowhere near the size of something like Twitter. So, I mean, this is again why instead of starting a new one, you just buy what there already is. And if you consider how much the whole media business, everyone in media needs Twitter, because they do. I mean, especially news organizations, they use Twitter as their main distribution platform. So why build a new one when you can just buy the one that everyone uses?
And also building something of the magnitude of Twitter is going to cost a lot, because I did use Parler. I got Parler 2 weeks back.
Did you?
Someone in the office actually made me get it. Ryan made me get it.
Okay.
I got this app and wow, hey, it is absolutely terrible.
Is it?
It feels like you're using a little website in a little app, and it's just terrible. Everything just highlights, even the menu highlights. God. Sometimes you can't tap certain things. It's terrible. So yeah.
All right.
No Parler for me.
I think we discussed this with Simpiwe one morning, but now you've got a similar problem, and we like to solve problems here. You love advice. Mash, you love asking the audience for advice, and sometimes they give you really good advice, and sometimes it's terrible, but we'll take our chances today. So you wanted to know, how do you deal with someone who's owed you money for a long time and has no desire to pay you back? And just on that note, I saw, this is quite interesting, a story that's just come up, that apparently there's a bar somewhere.
Yes. I was actually going to get to that as well.
Oh, it's Saint. Saint Champagne Bar and Lounge. They have just started naming and shaming people who haven't paid their bills. So this is what they said on their Instagram. We've reached out to you numerous times, and they've got the guy's like handle, and they've put a photo of him up, right? In the form of phone calls, emails, texts, and messages, and we've never received a response. Please pay what you owe Saint Lounge with immediate effect. We have expenses and responsibilities, and your failure to make payment has affected our business and many families. We have a duty to pay suppliers, staff, talent, artists, agents, attorneys, the City of Cape Town, government, and contractors, and there are too many expenses and responsibilities. South Africa and Africa as a whole, please assist us in reaching out to this person. Failure to pay will result in extreme measures. Thank you in advance for your cooperation. To you and other customers who still owe us money, you have 30 minutes to now clear your bill. We will continue to post every week until you've cleared your bill. How's that, huh?
Oh my gosh.
And there are already 3,800 comments and building. And this person, I hope they've replied, but it's a musician.
Musician?
It's a musician that owes this money. And you can only imagine what that bill must be for them to have gone to this trouble. It's, we're not talking about like a couple of hundred rand, right?
No, about 10,000 rand.
Shit. Okay, well, I think this is great. This is what social media is for. If you don't pay your bills and you are not responding to emails or phone calls or WhatsApps or whatever, this is a way to get you to pay, right?
Yes, it is. This whole trend actually started with Mihlalin Damase, who is a beauty YouTuber. She's very popular. And she actually called out brands that owe her money. There's quite a number of brands that she's actually done work for, but then haven't paid her in months. So she went on Instagram and she called them out one by one. And it was gin brands, alcohol brands, makeup brands. It was about three brands or four brands in total. And one by one, she came for them. And that's where Saint got this. They saw that within a day, Michele was paid. And they were like, listen, we're going to be doing this as well. So on, I think it was Saturday or Friday, evening, when Saint issued their first warning that, listen, Sunday, 7 p.m., we on. We're going to be announcing, rather exposing everyone who hasn't paid their bills. And then they came on Saturday and said, majority of the people have actually paid their bills. There's still a couple of people who haven't. have paid their bills, but have paid or made arrangements to pay their bills. And the people who haven't are the ones who will be exposing the following day.
This is the guy who hasn't paid his bills. This dude.
Oh, just look.
Have a look.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just try and zoom in on that there. This guy.
That's, that's not his car. Yeah.
You don't think that's his car? All right, so that's the guy who hasn't paid his bills.
You know, the city of Joburg does something similar.
Oh, yeah?
And I know because it's happened to me multiple times. But they type up a letter on an A4 piece of paper stating exactly what you owe.
Yes.
And saying this is a pre-termination notice. And they put it nicely into a plastic sleeve so that it's protected and press stick it to your gate so that people walking past can see how much you owe. That works too. You feel a little bit silly that that's happened and that all your neighbors know who you are.
Wow.
I
mean, for some people, that's way more embarrassing than, you know, any kind of bill that's unpaid or anything like that, because your actual neighbors can see it and they're like, oh, that person doesn't pay their bills, they're a delinquent
payer.
It's very good. That's funny.
It reminds me of my previous complex I used to live in, where so first of all, you guys know this by now, the walls were basically cardboard.
Yes.
And the electricity meters were really loud. So as soon as your electricity went below a certain amount of kilowatts, it'll start beeping. And like beeping like crazy nonstop. And even if you could stop the sound, but it'll stop for like an hour and it'll start beeping again. So it was always so humiliating because you'd walk past someone's apartment and you'd be like, ooh, chill. These people can't even pay the electricity. You know, it was always the most humiliating thing just walking down the corridors. Even my neighbors sometimes out here that beep, beep, beep all day long. And I'll be like, yo, this person.
I didn't realize that's what that sound is. I was actually unaware of this. So now you've taught me something.
Mm-hmm. People aren't paying the electricity. But I wanted to find out how to deal with people who are not paying you in a personal capacity. Yes, Michale dealt with brands like that. Saint is dealing with people like this. Well, they're musicians, if we can call them that. I want to find out, how can we personally deal with people? Or should we just post them as well?
Well, first of all, when they come to ask you for a candle, like, give them a candle. That's a start. I don't know. I think that this naming and shaming thing may be the way to take things, because some people are just shameless. They don't mind racking up bills. They don't mind, you know, if it's not their money and they've put you in a position where you suddenly are down because you don't have any money, but they've borrowed it and they're okay. I mean, there's some people who just have no shame. They'll be like, yeah, you remember that 500 rand that I borrowed from you? Well, you're not going to get that back. I mean, there are people who will actually do that, who behave exactly like that. I just think it's appalling. I don't know how.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't go to sleep at night if I know I owe people money.
I can't. I really can't. And you get those people who, after they borrow money from you and you want it back,
right,
you have to kind of borrow it back from them and actually ask for it. And sometimes they give you attitude. They're like, it's just 500 rand. And it's like, it wasn't just 500 rand when you asked for it.
Well, exactly. And I do think that there's some people who just have hides like rhinos. They just, you can't, they don't seem to get, they're not insulted or offended by the fact that this is how they behave. They just spend money. They borrow from other people. They don't seem to give a shit. So I don't know how that works. I really don't know how that works. But if you have any suggestions, Leanne, we're all ears.
No, I'm usually the borrower, so.
Right.
And no, I don't sleep at night because of it. But yeah, I think understand as well that somebody who doesn't pay you back is not always because they're just thick-skinned or don't give a shit. It's sometimes because they really can't.
Well,
and it is bothering them. So, yeah, keep that in mind.
Okay, but I mean, I do think that that's the minority. I don't. So some of these people clearly don't give a shit. They really don't. And I've seen this. I mean, like one of my friends says that this girl he knows owes him, I don't know, lots of money. Let's call it thousands of rands. And she's a friend. She's not a girlfriend or anything. And she's borrowed because she was in need, and he felt sorry for her. And now she's just not even, you know, she's not even picking up the phone when he calls.
Bringing it up.
Well, that's what happens. So, my mother actually started a machinisa business. And hey, ma'am. She started a machinisa business a couple of years ago. And she started borrowing people money. And my dad advised against it. I also advised against it because I told her, this won't end well.
Yeah.
This won't end well. Years later, she lost half her friends because her friends just borrowed money and never paid it back. They were referring people who borrowed money and never paid it back. And it turned into a whole dilemma. And my mom actually would call me and be like, please call this person and pretend to be a lawyer and tell them that, yeah, you're going to actually, or I'm going to take legal action against them. Just put on your best English accent and yeah, just do it for me quickly. And there I was. I'd spend like 2 hours of my week every week just calling people pretending to be a lawyer for my mom. So that was something that I experienced firsthand. And after that, I thought to myself, yo, I will never allow myself to be in this position, in a position where I have to call people and pretend to be a lawyer to get my money back.
Well,
and that's one thing I learned. If you're going to borrow someone money, number one, make sure it's someone that you can talk to without feeling intimidated, and someone who you can just straight up say to them, hey,
listen,
donor, bring my money back.
Like the Mashanisa business is big in South Africa. Hey? There are lots of people who are professional, in inverted commas, professional money lenders, but they charge outrageous rates. And it's just if people get into those debts, they just never get out of them. They'll charge like, you know, 40-50% interest a month, which is just crazy. Mm. I do want to bring this up because this is related to everything we've discussed so far this morning. And in some ways, it's the same kind of thing. This is a story about Elon Musk and Twitter, but this is not what you expect. He threatened that he's going to name and shame companies who've paused advertising on Twitter. So prior to the statement, he blamed pressure from activist groups for the pause in ad spending. He said investors at Twitter would not become a free-for-all hellscape in a letter. So he's apparently said he's going to name all the companies that have decided to pause advertising with Twitter since he's taken over. And he's going to diss them, basically, wherever he can. Which is pretty interesting. I think it would be a really, really cool thing to do. So apparently someone called Mike Davis said to him, you have 114 million Twitter followers. Name and shame the advertisers who are succumbing to the advertiser boycotts so that we can counter boycott them and get your $8 monthly subscription growing ASAP so that we can start to make up for lost revenue now. And Elon Musk said, thank you. A thermonuclear name and shame is exactly what will happen if this continues. So we will see.
I think I feel like that's a bit harsh. I mean, you guys know that I'm in the social media business for brands and handle their advertising on certain platforms and ad spend. And there are some companies which have stopped. For instance, VW South Africa has come out and said, we are pausing ads until we know, until the Twitter market stabilizes. Mm. You know, I think it's absolutely your personal right as a brand or a person to stop or withhold advertising for now.
No, but
I certainly would.
So these companies are all a bunch of, first of all, the marketing people in these companies are absolute lowlives and scum, most of them. Second of all, they are terrified of bad publicity. Right. So they want all the good publicity when there's something good going on, but they want none of the bad. And they hide in the shadows. These are big companies who ought to be courageous enough to have the courage of their convictions. Now, you will never win in marketing unless you take a few risks. And these people expect to take no risks and reap all the rewards. So, no, I think good goes with the bad. If we're going to name and shame people when there's a boycott, then when there's a counter boycott, we can name and shame them too. So I'm all for what was called by this Mike Davis, this idea of naming and shaming. Go for it. Let's hear who they are. I want to know who these companies are, because a lot of them are hiding behind, you know, massive corporate budgets. They don't spend them. That causes a logjam. It's harder than ever to get advertising money out of people these days. I want to know who the ones who have the courage to stand for something instead of just stand against something. I want to know who those people are. So I'm all for it. That's a big news story.
What is worrying me most about this whole name and shaming culture we're actually stepping into at the moment is the fact that at some point, because it seems like everybody's starting to do it. You know, brands are starting to name and shame. Influencers are starting to name and shame. Everybody's naming and shaming at the moment. And if we all name and shame, including Twitter naming and shaming, at some point, it's not going to mean anything. Nobody's going to be afraid of naming and shaming, because if everybody's naming and shaming, then what reason do you have to be scared? Because everybody's being named and shamed.
Right.
So at some point, it's not going to work anymore. It's not going to work anymore.
Well, I mean, ultimately,
and that's what's worrying me.
Look, all of this stuff is going to work a whole lot less because eventually everyone's going to be doing it, right? Here's a terrible story. Yonder says, a friend of mine is owed by a big pharmaceutical vaccine manufacturing company. 150,000 rand they're owed. And when he asked to be paid, they say they'll only pay him 10K. Yeah, you see, this is also where these big companies will pressure the little companies out of business, because you don't have the kind of cash flow that a big, massive multinational corporation has. So if you're a small business and you're owed 150 grand, that's a big dent in your bottom line. It's a big part of your cash flow. Mm-hmm. How are you going to survive? You know, if this is the kind of thing that you do, it's really, that's tough. I don't like hearing stories like that, but they are happening everywhere. All right. One quick thing before we get to Dr. Hanan, there's another story in the news that I thought would interest you. So Meghan Markle has changed her mind about royal titles. Surprise, surprise. She had a conversation with Princess Eugenie and Beatrice. And she said Meghan had previously disregarded the importance of titles. But however, after seeing how useful the titles have been for Eugenie and Beatrice, who, you know, both of them are friends with Meghan, she's now determined to cling to her titles. So that's from one of the news sources close to the palace. You know, there's always these insiders. but I don't know what I don't know what I believe here. I know that this woman is just a relentless self-marketer, self-serving, you know, whatever she needs to do to get and keep the attention, she will. And as for Eugenie and Beatrice, the daughters of Prince Andrew, I'm not surprised that they explain the importance of their titles. What else do those two have? You know, what else have they got going for them? Really? Yeah. they need those titles very badly, because otherwise they'll have nothing. So if they weren't princesses, you wouldn't give them a second look, right? Am I being unfair?
Yeah. No, it's true.
No.
All right. Anyway, there's the little bit of news that we wanted to get in before we get to Dr. Hanan. But it is Monday morning, which means it is going to be okay. Is it going to be okay, Dr. Hanan? You've got to tell us.
It's always going to be okay. Absolutely.
All right. So first things first, Dr. Hanan is here to talk about something that we've really got to pay some attention to. Why? Because it's that time of year. Matric exams are on the horizon and actually underway for some people too. Now, along with that comes a lot of stress and anxiety for both the learners who are writing the exams and for their parents. So today we're going to speak to Dr. Hanan about what we can do to help our kids who are feeling a little bit stressed about the exams. And it's not just the matrics who are writing. A lot of other kids are stressed too. And we're joined by Tyron Fuchsloch, who is a teacher. He's been a teacher for 22 years, worked with children from 6 to 20 years old. He started his own school back in 2014, which is pretty amazing. And now he has 5 campuses in Gauteng and in the Western Cape. And the schools try to help children who suffer from high anxiety and a host of other learning challenges. So, Tyron, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Yeah, morning, Gareth. Good on yourself.
Good. Nice to see you. First of all, just tell us about your schools before we carry on.
Thanks, Gareth. So basically our schools cater for, you know, those kind of children who do suffer from high anxiety, ADD, ADHD. I think, you know, if you go back 10, 15 years, a lot of these children kind of flew under the radar. No one really looked out for them. They didn't have a place to go. So we sort of put schools up where they had a place to go, where they were getting more support, where their anxieties were managed. Whereas in, you know, bigger classrooms, no one was really kind of identifying these children. Mm-hmm. So our schools will, you know, put them in an environment where they can learn without being persecuted, without feeling like they, you know, not normal, because a lot of schools were making them feel that way. Some of them have dyslexia, dyscalculia, which means they can't read or they can't actually do maths. And bigger schools weren't picking that up. So we've given them a place where we can help them through those difficulties. And that was causing, obviously, it's huge anxiety. If you can't read something, you're not going to tell your classmates or your teacher. So at our schools, all the teachers, all the fellow students know what these children are going through. So they feel a lot more comfortable learning in our sort of a classroom environment, Gareth.
Okay. So, Doc, what do you make of the matric exam stress? Is this something we should be paying extra careful attention to? You know, every year we get told we've got to tread on eggshells with matrics, because matric is so hard. And, you know, I remember it and I wasn't stressed at all, but I'm not the usual. How do you feel about this, Doc? Do you think that we've built this up and we've actually created a mountain out of a molehill and we've made it so absolutely scary for kids that it's added to the anxiety? Or do you think it really is something that requires a huge amount of, you know, delicate, careful, and considered attention?
Right. So let me give a bit of context. In life, or whatever you value comes with stress.
Right.
So value and stress are married. You can't divorce the two. So the more you value something, the more there is stress attached to it, because there's a consequence of it not working out. Mm-hmm. So I value my kids, it comes with stress. I value my marriage, it comes with stress. I value my work, it comes with stress. So when I see a matriculant comes into my office and says, I'm not stressed, that means, well, they don't value it. So even if you're well prepared, your body is naturally going to react with anxiety because you value it. So should it be stressful? Well, if you value matric and you value your marks and you value your future education. I mean, look, if you're looking to leaving matric and going and doing something else that's not related to the academic world, that's okay. Then you wouldn't necessarily value it. But if you value that trajectory, then naturally it's going to come with stress. But there's a big difference between handling stress in effective ways and not handling stress and letting it absolutely control you. And the difference is, one is preparation. So once you're prepared for something, then anxiety doesn't overwhelm you. So I always tell people the following. My favorite term to use of all time is blueprints and frameworks. And the reason why I love blueprints and frameworks is because the moment your framework to managing a stress is more complicated than the stressor, then you'll never lose control. The moment the stressor is more complicated than your framework, well, now you're going to bleed anxiety and fall apart and burn out. So the analogy that I use, and I've used this a couple of times even on the show, is if I give you a Rubik's Cube and I say to you, you've got 10 minutes to do this in. Now let's create some consequences. Let's create, well, if you don't manage it in 10 minutes, I take away, I don't know, R1 million out of your account. How do you think you're going to feel 10 minutes later? Well, you're going to feel incredibly stressed, maybe helpless, hopeless, despondent, because you don't have the skill set. You don't know how to do it, versus me giving you the same Rubik's Cube, but this time, I give you the blueprint, the method, the system, the step-by-step guide with pictures. How do you feel 10 minutes later? Well, you feel in control because you have the method. People think resiliency is my internal ability to manage what's in front of me. Not true. Resiliency is, do I have the skill set, the method, the blueprint, the system to manage the stress that's in front of me? That's why you get people that have a massive Rubik's Cube in life in terms of exam in front of them and they feel in control. Somebody else has something quite simple in front of them and they're falling apart. So the first method, and there's no quick fix around this, if you value it, make sure that you have the skill set to master it. If you value it, make sure, and that's what the school system, Tyron will tell you, that's where the school system comes in, because it teaches the kids a method, a system, in order to manage with the stress that's in front of them. So that's number one. Make sure that you have the method, make sure you've studied, make sure you're well prepared for, because nothing beats that. Nothing beats that. You can, if you're not prepared, anxiety is going to take over.
Right.
Period. Period. Especially if you value it. And then the second thing that you want to look after is your body, your diet, your exercise, your sleep. And the third thing, and the final thing that I'll mention is, so again, once we've got to study, we've got to prepare. Two, you've got to look after your body. And three, you've got to learn immediate relaxation techniques when you're actually in the exam. So how do you calm your body down? And I want to suggest one thing. And by the way, you can Google plenty. You can Google breathing technique, relaxation technique, progressive muscle relaxation techniques. You can Google a lot of things that will help you in the moment. But I want to suggest one that has lasted and it's really shown incredible effectiveness in the moment. So whether, by the way, you have exam stress, you have stage anxiety, when you want to calm yourself down, you do this. For any emotion to be created on planet Earth, your body temperature has to go up. There's no emotion on the planet that can be created without your body temperature going up. Your body temperature has to rise. Hmm. So if we can control body temperature, we can ultimately control emotion. So in other words, if I take somebody and put them in an ice bucket or one of those walk-in freezers, within 2 minutes, emotions decrease. Within 2 minutes. Hmm. You know, I have people sitting here having panic attacks. The moment I turn on the aircon, lower their body temperature, anxiety goes away. It's not possible for anxiety for your body to react physiologically when your body temperature is low. So if we can decrease your physiological temperature, we will decrease emotion. So in the exam, never mind the breathing technique, which is all wonderful and great, but make sure your body temperature goes down. Get a glass of water or maybe a bottle of water, ice cold water, maybe wear maybe loose clothing or maybe clothing that are not so warm, but make sure your body temperature is low because you will decrease your anxiety.
Hmm. I didn't know that. That's very, very handy stuff. So Tyron, what kinds of things do you guys do besides what Dr. Hanan's already addressed here that you need to
I agree with Dr. Hanan 100%. Look, what he said is definitely relevant. A well-prepared person or learner in this case is going to do much better at the exams. Mm-hmm. However, being on the front line, children nowadays, to actually get them to prepare, thoroughly and to prepare in time is actually quite a difficult feat. So we obviously preach to them all the time, guys, when are you going to start studying? Have you started? And, you know, children nowadays, Dr. and Gareth, they're under so much anxiety and stress. You know, I'll just give you some examples. The divorce rate nowadays is so much higher. Kids are having to deal with not only their own stress, but their parents' stress as well. You know, the parents put a lot of their stress onto their children. They've got to grow up a lot faster, deal with that. Things like social media are making them feel like, you know, they always have to be in a relationship. There always has to be someone in their lives. You know, that causes them extra stress and anxiety. So these poor kids are under so much stress from other things. I'll give you another example. Cell phones, it's a big problem. Oh, we actually take the phones away from them at school. They film each other and they send out TikToks of each other. And now you've got a poor child who there's a TikTok, out, you know, of them out there somewhere that's causing them stress. So by the time they actually sit down and go, wow, I'm now starting to feel exam stress. All these other stresses have had such an impact on them that they're planning late. They're not starting to study in time. They're basically kind of waiting until the day before. So it's difficult to actually say, yes, you must prepare early. And, you know, we help them with study skills courses. We try do, you know, timetables for them when they need to study. But it's very difficult for them to actually place that part of, you know, of their lives as a study skill into everything that they're dealing with.
Well, let me ask you this. What can parents do to help, and what can the learners do for themselves besides what we've already covered with preparation and all the rest of it? I mean, you mentioned phones. Can we, for example, like just discipline ourselves, and maybe the parents can help do this too, where you have less time with your phone while you're writing exams. You shouldn't be involved with the phone while you're so busy with this other stuff. Is that easier said than done?
100%. I would say their phones need to be actually taken away from the children. The problem is that, and I'm sure Dr. Anand can agree with me, I don't know if you've experienced it, but we're actually having children who are going through similar withdrawal symptoms to actual drug users when their phones are being taken away from them, because they're so used to having that piece of equipment with them. Taking it away actually causes a withdrawal, a physical withdrawal that we can even see at school. Sometimes we take their phones away and they just, you know, they battle to cope. Sometimes we get new students that are not used to us taking their phones away. It takes them 2 to 3 weeks to normalize. So definitely it must be taken away from them. Look, it's a good tool to use if you're doing geography and you want to Google something, you know, geomorphology or something, but the children obviously abuse it. You know, they don't use it for its intended purposes. They're basically on social media talking to their friends. So I think it is a good tool, but parents need to be more hands-on in terms of you know, what they're allowing their children to use. But once again, I'm bringing it back to couples these days who a lot of them are divorced. A lot of moms and dads are both working full-time jobs. So who actually watches these children and monitors their actual, phone usage time? So it's a double-edged sword. It's very difficult. But I think we need to teach children rather to actually be disciplined and know when they need to use their phone for certain things. That's what we're trying to do at our schools, is teach them when and where and how to use their phone to help them study.
Yeah, Doc, I mean, this phone thing, the fact that Tyron says it's almost like they go through withdrawal like a drug addict would, this is a big problem. It's what we've been warning about for years. What do we do?
You know what? The thing is that we have to accept that stress is not going anywhere. Life is becoming way more complicated. I remember when I was at school, when I finished my trick, 97, I mean, if you got 2 distinctions, you were considered a freaking genius. These days, kids are getting 8, 9, 10 distinctions, and people are like, well, not even batting an eyelid. So the pressure is on, and the competition is on, people comparing themselves. So, of course, there's an incredible amount of stress. But I'll mention, people talk about discipline, but discipline is predicated on a framework. And the more difficult something is, the more specific the framework has to be. And I'll give you a quick example. I know we're running out of time, but if I take somebody that's, let's take gym as an example, doesn't know fitness, doesn't understand fitness, or let's take somebody that does, let's take somebody that's known fitness their whole life. If I give them a very general framework, go to the gym Monday, Wednesday, Friday, because gym is within their comfort zone, they'll outdo you. They will go to gym Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But if I take somebody that's never been to the gym, doesn't know what gym looks like, not a health conscious kind of person, and I tell them to go to the gym with the same framework, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it will never happen. For them, I have to be much more specific with my framework. So for them, I have to say, Sunday, I'm coming to your house. We're packing your bag. We put in the car. Monday, mm. I'm waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're coming to your house. I'm fetching you, getting dressed. I'm taking you to a personal trainer. I paid 6 weeks in advance. You have to be that specific with somebody that doesn't lack the discipline. So discipline doesn't just happen. It's predicated on a particular and a specific framework. And the more difficult it is, the more specific the framework has to be.
All right, I love it. Yeah. I love it. This is something we could carry on talking about and probably should, but we're out of time, as you've already pointed out, Doc. Leanne and Mash and I will no doubt have some things to say to this. Mash only wrote Matric, what, like 2 years ago or whatever, right, Mash? You could speak with some authority on this. But Tyron, thank you for your time, and Dr. Hanan, always.
Yes, my pleasure.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You. Keep well.
Nice to see you. There we go. Matric exam time. It's a mm-hmm.
And then add to that load shedding and water shortages. Yay. My word, it's complicated these days.
Sure, not as straightforward as everybody says it is. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment or two with more cliffcentral.com, and because it's Monday, we're going to have Markets Mondays today with markets.com. that is coming up in the next hour. Plenty of other good stuff to get to. Don't go anywhere. And if you are writing matric exams, or you have someone in the house who is writing matric exams, good luck. That's all we can say. And as Dr. Hanan says, use those frameworks. Make sure that you're prepared. It's the best way to make sure you go in with less stress. But I love that idea of just cooling your body down. Huh?
Yeah. Often taking a glass of water and holding it to your wrists. Hmm. That helps me a lot.
It really does help. Yeah. Whenever I'm warm, I'm just an anxious mess. But whenever I'm cold, I can do anything. I feel like I can just take on the world. It does help.
Basically, we all just have to learn to regulate our body temperature down, and then we won't be such emotional sacks of shit. So let's get our acts together. All right. Cliffcentral.com.